This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
For the first time in their history, the St. Louis Blues are the Stanley Cup champions.
The St. Louis Blues, for the first time in franchise history, 51 seasons, have won the Stanley Cup.
And the time winds down. They did it. It's over. The game is over. The series is over. The wait is over. And the St. Louis Blues are the Stanley Cup champions for the first time in franchise history.
And they will be parading in the streets of St. Louis in a few hours' time, celebrating their Blues and their first ever Stanley Cup championship. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're going to start with the St. Louis Blues winning Lord Stanley's Cup. And, of course, we are all over the Winnipeg Jets and the NHL draft, which is 1 week, or rounds 2 through 7 are 1 week from today. Round one will have been concluded next Friday. I say good morning now to both Ezzy and Dave. Gentlemen, it's good to see you. The 2018-19 Stanley Cup season, NHL season, finally concludes with the St. Louis Blues from dead last to the champions. What a night it was, Game 7 in Boston.
Dave and I are just happy that you're here, Drew. Like, we're physically happy that you're physically here after your little whitewater rafting trip in Colorado.
Yeah, I had a great time.
Like, after I saw that picture, I was just kind of wondering if we would ever see you again, because you look pretty scared.
Well, you know, I wasn't scared. It took me about, within about 20 seconds of getting on the boat and getting used to what I was, you know, what I was in for, and having to figure out, you know, how to balance yourself on the raft and everything else. I was comfortable, and Laura was with me too, so we were both comfortable. It took us about 20 to 25 seconds, and we were a little apprehensive as they're going through the, you know, they're going through the safety talk about all the things that could happen to you and what you need to do if you fall out of the boat. But, you know, pretty quickly on, I was comfortable with it. There's a video. I'll show you the video after on my phone of what we sort of went through and the rapids that we hit and everything. But if you've never gone whitewater rafting before, I do highly recommend it. We had a great time.
I'm never going to go, but
probably not.
Was it just you and Laura? Was it one of those bigger?
There's six people on the boat with us plus the guide.
Right.
So
can you bring anything? Like, are you able to bring like beer or snacks or anything like that, or is it just like your life jacket and that's it?
Well, you're wearing a wetsuit and a life jacket, and no, there would be, it's not like a casual rafting down a river.
It's not like a little dinghy yet.
Yeah, you're paddling hard and everything else, and you're
still got to have snacks though. I mean, you get hungry out there.
There was no time for snacks. You were paddling basically the entire time, and yeah.
So like, how long did this whole thing last? Like an hour?
No, I think we were pretty much on the boat for almost 2 hours. You know, okay, from where we got put into the lower Eagle River, or the Eagle River, and we were on the lower basin of the Eagle River until we departed after, you know, a couple hours when we reached our destination. It was about 2 hours from start to finish.
I'm just glad you're not injured. I know Dave was secretly hoping that you'd be injured and you'd miss the show this week, so happy that you're back in one piece.
For the record, I don't think it was so secretly. I'm fairly certain I told Drew to do a Class 5 rapid when he was asking folks for intel advice on what was the class of this rapid.
This typically was a 3, but because the water is so high, because it's, you know, relatively early in the season,
the sea was angry that day, my friends.
The sea was angry. Yeah, the water is so high and moving so quickly that they said it was closer to a 3.5. So I'm probably good at that level. I mean, as a first time whitewater rafter who's probably not going to make it a regular thing, I'm probably good at that level.
Well, and Ezzy, you shouldn't diminish. You have been in rapids. Pine Port Rapids in the Whiteshell.
Oh, that's right.
And you didn't need a boat, as he was just lying there on the rocks back, you know.
It's actually a beautiful part of Manitoba that I don't think a lot of people have ever been to. Pine Point Rapids.
I've never even heard of it. So
I took Ezzy on one of my excursions.
That's nice. You guys had a nice date up there.
We had a nice little Sunday.
Yeah, nice little lunch.
Yeah. Picnic lunch? Did Yogi come and steal your picnic basket?
No, we probably bought it from a store.
Okay, fair enough. Anyways, let's get started with the St. Louis Blues. It is going to be a bit of a wet day in St. Louis. Looks like the parade is going to get rained on, pardon the pun.
I don't think you can rain on their parade.
Not right now. The party is going strong there after they defeated the Boston Bruins on Wednesday evening to win Game 7 and take that series. You know, is there anything that we can learn or that the rest of the NHL can learn from the Stanley Cup victory by the Blues? Is there any, you know, it's a copycat league. We hear that so often. Is there anything that the Blues have done that other teams can use it as a blueprint for going forward?
Well, I'll start with this. Every year around American Thanksgiving, a month or so before American Thanksgiving, we talk about how if you're not in a playoff spot,
yeah,
by American Thanksgiving, your chances of making the playoffs are slim to none. Right?
That was the old adage,
right?
Yes.
But I think what we've learned this year is that you can be in last place in the conference or last place in the NHL in late December, Dave, mm-hmm. or early January, and you can not only win the Stanley Cup, but you can make the playoffs. So I don't think, you know, teams are going to say, okay, well, we're not doing very well 30 or 40 games into the season. We can still win the Stanley Cup. But at the very least, you know, there's a chance that you can get into the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's number one for me. The Blues proved that you can still get in and you can still go far in the playoffs, even if you started off the season and you fired your coach, right? Because obviously mm-hmm. Mike Yeo was fired. Craig Berube comes in, and as far as I'm concerned, he should win Coach of the Year, especially with what they did in the playoffs. But I think when you're talking about the Blues, there's one thing that stands out to me about the style that they play, because we know that they're not the fastest team. I mean, the Bruins had more star power, and that was kind of, you know, a big storyline going into the final, right? I mean, Vladimir Tarasenko is the only player that they have that resembles a superstar. I don't even know if you would call him a superstar, but when you're talking about Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron.
Mm-hmm. Tarasenko is the only player on the Blues team that when, you know, he has the puck and he gains the blue line with some speed,
right.
you're thinking, this isn't good. This, right. Something could happen here.
Right. And Jaden Schwartz, Ryan O'Reilly, Braden Shen. I mean, they've got a lot of good skilled forwards, but mm-hmm. but they don't have guys at the level of Marchand and Bergeron. Bergeron, you're talking about, I mean, I've said this many times before, future Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And Brad Marchand's coming off of a 100-point season. Chara, you know, I mean, they don't have any players with the resumes that the Bruins players had. And obviously didn't have any players that had ever won a Stanley Cup. But when you're talking about, you know, the sum of their parts, and that defense to me stands out, guys. When you look at Game 7 and how the Blues shut it down after they went up 2-0, I mean, you're talking about a defense that features Alex Petrangelo, Colton Parayko. I mean, Joel Edmondson was really good mm-hmm. in Game 7. And it's also a defense that you remember had to trade Kevin Shattenkirk back, what was that, 3 or 4 years ago?
Sure.
And, you know, even a guy like Robert Bortuzzo had an impact on defense, even though he was a healthy scratch for Game 7, right? So it's a very solid defense. Jay Bomeister's the other player that I didn't mention. Mm-hmm. And that was probably, guys, one of the players for me that I was the happiest that won the cup, because think about Jay Bomeister, you know, he was the NHL Ironman, you know, over 1,000 career games, 35 years old. I mean, it's most likely going to be his last opportunity to win a Stanley Cup. Who knows? Maybe the Blues go back, but I mean, for players like Jay Bomeister, Alex Steen, I mean, you're happy for all these guys, Dave, but especially the guys that have played in the NHL for so long. And obviously Steen has the Winnipeg connections. But I think, you know, when you talk about blueprint, Drew, based on what you asked earlier,
mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, it's kind of it shows you that the style of hockey that the Blues play is conducive to the Stanley Cup playoffs. And say whatever you want. Speed obviously kills in the NHL. I mean, you can't be slow and lumbering anymore. But you look at guys like Patrick Maroon. You look at guys like Robert Bortuzzo. I mean, these are not fast guys, but they had an impact and they were big contributors to their Stanley Cup team. Obviously, without Ryan O'Reilly, without Alex Petrangelo, without the obvious excellent goaltending of Jordan Binnington, the Blues don't win the Stanley Cup. But I think their style of play, a lot of people didn't think their style of play would be good enough to win the Stanley Cup. Maybe
heavy hockey.
Yeah, exactly. And we know that the playoffs are different than the regular season. So I'm not saying that, you know, we're going to see the return of, you know, the type of hockey you saw in 2010.
The LA Kings, for example.
Or 2012. But I think teams are going to think more about, you know, signing players like Patrick Maroon, because Maroon is a guy, I forget how many goals he ended up having. He was 6 goals or something like that, 10 points. I don't have it in front of me. But when you're talking about Patrick Maroon, he wasn't just a spare part. He was a guy that played a big role on that third line.
And I think to Drew's original question about the idea of a copycat league, I think it was Ray Ferraro who said, something along the lines of, you really need to coach or when you're looking at your team, you can't suddenly just change the entire fabric of your team in like one off season. So it's very hard in this league to just automatically switch over and say, oh, okay, this is how the Blues did it. We're not configured like that at all, so let's just change our entire game plan. I don't think you can do that. Now, I'm not saying that you can't start to try and put that into your system, but when I hear that, I think to myself, like, teams don't change over the night, especially in the NHL, especially under a cap.
Mm-hmm. Especially just, with contracts and everything else.
You just can't do that anymore. So to the idea that it's – sure, you can incorporate points that, like, as he was talking about, the high idea of having some of those – you know, heavier role players. I'm not suggesting otherwise, but at the same time, I just don't think like a team like the Jets, for example, mm-hmm. are going to suddenly alter their DNA completely. I mean, they're going to have to do some things differently, obviously.
Yeah.
But the fact is, you're not altering your DNA completely based on what one team has been able to do to have success. Now, if the St. Louis Blues won again next year or made it to the, you know, the Stanley Cup Finals, and then again, then suddenly maybe you're going to see teams go, okay, well, they've got something here. But this could also be interpreted as just like as you just said, Jordan Binnington being an extraordinarily hot goaltender mm-hmm. and, you know, guys meshing together and playing, you know, doing what they needed to do all season long to get into the playoffs and then challenge for that cup.
Well, when the parity that exists in the league, sorry, Dave, but given the parity that obviously exists in the league, and we've seen it because, you know, number 8 seeds knock out number 1 seeds mm-hmm. and it happens with on a fairly regular basis. It's almost foolhardy to try and copy anything because, you know, if a couple things are different for the St. Louis Blues during this run, maybe...
I mean, if the Jets hold on to a lead here...
The Jets hold on to a lead. I mean, you got to remember, not to take anything away from St. Louis because they were full marks for beating the Jets and beating the Stars and beating the Sharks and beating mm-hmm. the Bruins. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's so much of this game and so much of the league is a coin flip. It's hard to try and model yourself after another team in the way that they perform on the ice.
By the way, Pat Maroon only had 3 goals and 7 points, but, you know, he had the big game winner in round 2. The point is, he was a factor offensively, and his physicality was
noticeable. It was noticeable,
and it was a big part of the series against the Jets. And I think, you know, when you talk about even guys like Ivan Barbashev and Oscar Sundqvist, obviously Sundqvist had the suspension, so did Barbashev.
But Sundqvist was important in first round against the Jets.
But I mean, mm-hmm. that type of forechecking and that type of physical play, it wears teams down, right? And the Bruins are a physical team as well. I mean, especially you remember the Bruins Blue Jackets series. That was a really physical series. But, you know, when you're talking about guys that are dealing with injuries, and Zdeno Chara was one of those guys. I mean, mm-hmm. the guy didn't have a jaw,
yeah.
right? So when you're talking
he had a jaw. He just had multiple pieces of a jaw.
Exactly. But when you're talking about, you know, the Blues, I think it's to Dave's point, when you're talking about a team's strengths, I mean, the St. Louis Blues are not the Winnipeg Jets. They're not the Tampa Bay Lightning. They don't have Nikita Kucherov, Braden Point, and Steven Stamkos, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like we talked about, I mean, Ryan O'Reilly deserved to win the Conn Smythe.
Deserving Conn Smythe from your... would you have voted for Binnington?
I would have given it to either Binnington or Rask, and I think you could make a strong argument. Another thing, guys, that's going to stand out to me about this year's Stanley Cup final is that Binnington was pulled in Game 3. Jake Allen comes in. Binnington, if you remember, he allowed 5 goals mm-hmm. and also got shelled in Game 6. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you saw the stats. When Binnington loses a game, I mean, he was, I think, 11-2.
He bounced back incredibly
right?
well.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, his stats were just incredible. You know, save percentage, goals against were really good after a loss. So, in a series in which you could actually argue Binnington wasn't in 2 of the 7 games, he wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for me, I would probably have given it to Rask, and I realize that giving it to a player on the losing team isn't popular. Like, we don't see that very often.
Well, J.S. Jaguar, I think, was the last one in that Ducks-Devils series.
And that was 2003.
Well, and before...
It was 16 years ago.
Hextall got it in the 80s,
I can't
sure.
believe, by the way, that that's 16 years ago.
Well, it's been a long time. Old. Yeah, nobody scored in that series. Remember, wasn't every game like 1-0, yeah. basically? I mean, you're the Devils fan. You should remember that.
John Madden was popping a few goals. And if you remember, Mike Rupp got the game winner.
See, I knew
the series winner.
Dave, I apologize for opening up that can of worms over there. But I mean, it's, you know,
I think one of the biggest takeaways for me was the fact that you had, and as he talked about it a little bit last week, the idea that guys played their role and didn't complain. The fact that you had a guy like Alex Steen playing on your fourth line, the fact that you had all of these guys willing to buy in to do what it takes to win.
Robbie Fabry was a healthy scratch in Game 7.
Right.
I mean, that's also because Robert Thomas was able to come back into the lineup, Dave, but you're absolutely right. I mean, the depth between the Blues and the Bruins, I don't think, is that the gap isn't as wide as some people thought. I think most people would give the edge to the Bruins when it comes to forward depth and D depth.
That's the NHL in a nutshell, though. Every team, I mean, the difference between at least the 16 playoff teams, for the most part, is minuscule between the top team and the bottom of the 16 teams.
Well, and the Tampa Bay Lightning losing in the first round in four games to Columbus is a perfect example of how close the NHL is, right? I mean, nobody saw that coming.
Literally.
And Columbus deserved to win that series, but Tampa Bay was as sure of a thing as there was in the first round, right? You're looking at them, 128 points. Oh, yeah, they're going to beat Columbus. And people were picking Tampa Bay in four, right? And then they got defeated in four. So I agree with you. The difference between, you know, the top teams and the bottom teams, it just the gap isn't as wide as it used to be.
And I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing for the NHL, but they love it. From my perspective as a fan, I mean, we saw it with the Raptors and the Warriors. You want to see, I think, superstar teams performing at the highest level when the stakes are the highest.
Actually, I would disagree. I like the idea that any team has a chance to win. I think that, I don't get me wrong, I enjoy basketball, but it's generally fairly predictable as to who is going to win the championship year in, year out. And I think in hockey, if this has proven us anything, you've got a team like St. Louis coming back from last to winning the Stanley Cup. To me, that is, you know, what makes it exciting for fans. And you've got these people in St. Louis now, 52 years in the making, and they're having the day of their lives. Because of the fact that a team that nobody expected to win went on this incredible run.
To your point, though, there, Dave. I mean, if you look at it from January on, you know, who were the two of the three top teams in the NHL from January 1st through the end of the season? The St. Louis Blues and the Boston Bruins. So, I mean, maybe the cream does rise to the crop in the NHL. It just sometimes takes a little bit longer for the cream to make itself known.
To the crop or the top?
I don't know. Whatever. It doesn't matter. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Winnipeg Jets. We know that the NHL draft, the first round, is 6 days away from now. When we come back, we'll discuss Andrew Kopp, his next contract, what you think the pending restricted free agent could get. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
It's going to be an interesting thing going forward. I don't know if you're asking me if I'm going to take a hometown discount or not. I don't know what that even looks like. So it's going to be an interesting summer. I couldn't even begin to tell you where, you know, things are going to start and where things are going to end. And
that's from the Winnipeg Jets' final media availability. Restricted free agent Andrew Kopp addressing his upcoming contract status. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. The Illegal Curve question of the day is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and his team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. The question of the day, and we want to hear from you via Twitter, @IllegalCurve, or send us your comments via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. We want to hear from you. What do you think the Jets should re-sign Andrew Kopp to in terms of a length of a contract and an average annual value? How much do you think Andrew Kopp should make in his next contract, and for how many years should the Jets look to be re-signing him?
You know, Drew, a lot of people don't know this, but Dave Minuk took a hometown discount to stay with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's true. He was a sought-after free agent.
Yeah.
He could have gone anywhere, but he decided to stay with us.
Yeah, could have gone to Florida, could have gone to New York, but
big-time
he stayed
free
right
agent.
Here in Peg City, baby.
Andrew Kopp coming off of a two-year, $2 million contract where he made $2 million per season, I should say. He's 2 years away from unrestricted
free agent. $1 million per season.
Pardon me, you're right. Yeah. I wrote that
we
down.
We know what you meant.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
$2 million total.
Yes,
yeah.
$2 million total. So his average annual value was $1 million over in the past 2 years. He's 2 years away from unrestricted free agency. He had a career high last year in goals and probably would have had a career high in points as well had he played a full 82-game season.
Yeah, he missed 15.
Right. He's got some durability in that he can play both up the middle and he can play on the wing. And it sounds like having spent a lot of the time on the wing as of late, the Jets are more interested in him seeing him up the middle as a center. What do you think Andrew Kopp is going to get in free agency? He is arbitration eligible for the first time in his career now.
Yeah, and, you know, Kopp is a guy that you know, we've talked about a little bit on the show and, you know, other shows on the station, but obviously, you know, Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor are the big ones. But, you know, Andrew Kopp to me is just as important as Laine and Connor. Obviously, he's not going to have, you know, the goal totals. He's never going to be a 40 or 50 goal scorer, guys. But, you know, you mentioned he can play center or wing. He can kill penalties. You know, he can even play on the second power play unit. And he's a guy that's proven, Dave, that he can play on the second line. He can play on the third or fourth line. And I brought up some comparables because you remember back to that 2013 draft, and Andrew Kopp was a fourth rounder, and you know he only spent the 2 years at the University of Michigan, and there was a question if he would spend that extra year.
Yeah, if you remember when he left the University of Michigan, Hall of Fame head coach Red Berenson was actually quite critical of Andrew Kopp.
Well, he was one of their top players.
Yeah, it was sort of a surprise that Kopp left when he did, and Red Berenson, who enjoyed the free labor that he was getting from Andrew Kopp, was unhappy with that decision.
And obviously, then also Jacob Trouba left after 1 year, too.
But knew Trouba was going to leave, given that he was a high first-round pick.
Yeah. But I'll pull up a couple of comparables. This morning, I pulled up a few comparables from the 2013 draft. And the two guys that stood out to me, and one guy was drafted four spots ahead of Andrew Kopp, that's Miles Wood of the New Jersey Devils. Prior to last season, so we're talking about fall 2018, Miles Wood signed a four-year, $11 million deal, $2.75 million AAV. So we should mention, though, that Miles Wood had only played 2 years at that point. So Kopp has now played four full NHL seasons, right? Mm-hmm. So we should keep that in mind. But the reason why I picked these guys, not only are they from the same draft year and same round when it comes to Miles Wood, but you're talking about very similar players. If you haven't watched Miles Wood, very physical player. He's a guy that can score goals. Last year, he had 19 goals and 32 points.
Wood plays on the wing, it should be noted. Yes. He's not, you know, whereas Kopp does have that flexibility, I mentioned.
Yes. So, I mean, and again, these aren't, it's not apples and apples here, but these are guys that I think are,
close comparable.
You know, third line guys, right? Yeah. So, Miles Wood, AAV, $2.75 million. Okay. And we have to mention that that was signed prior to this year. The other guy is Matthias Janmark. Matthias Janmark just signed a 1 year deal. I think he signed it 4 days ago, if I'm not mistaken, within the last week. So Matthias Janmark signed a 1 year, $2.3 million deal. Yep. Last year, he had 25 points in 81 games. His career high was 34 points 2 years ago. So when you're talking about Andrew Kopp, I mean, he probably gets around 30 to 35 points if he's healthy.
Last year, he would have, I mean, last year, like you said, he had 25 points in 69 games.
Right, so if he plays an extra 15 games, he's definitely going to hit 30.
Yes.
Right, so I think when you're talking about Janmark and Wood, these are kind of 30 to 35 point guys. Mm-hmm. And I think Andrew Kopp maybe gets, you know, closer to 40 points. I mean, he's still young, right? So when you're talking about Janmark, he got 2.3, Miles Wood got 2.75. So I don't think that Andrew Kopp is going to be exactly where those guys are. But I think if you're looking for a range on a shorter term deal, it's probably going to be between 2.3, 2.5 million. And if Andrew Kopp signs a longer term contract, I would expect it to be closer to 3 million.
Well, let me ask you this, Dave, that, you know, as you sort of did a great job there breaking down some of the comparables and what they might, you know, be expected to get on an AAV. How many years do you think that Andrew Kopp would be interested in signing him for? As I mentioned, he's a couple years away from unrestricted free agency. Two years away from unrestricted free agency. So, I mean, you know, obviously if you sign him for longer than 2 years, you're going to pay a premium to buy out some of those UFA years. Yep. Is this a guy the Jets are going to look to sign for just, you know, 2 years and then let him hit unrestricted free agency? Or is this a guy you think the Jets would be interested in signing for a 3 or 4 year deal and really keep him in the fold, you know, for the next little while?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he's a player that the Jets are high on. I think that they really like what he brings. I think the fact that they drafted him, that they've developed him, that he's gone through their system. He knows the system. I mean, Andrew Kopp is a hockey guy. I mean, there's a guy who like lives and breathes hockey. I see him at Moose games quite often. He's a guy who just comes to the rink to watch the game. So he's kind of like that rink rat idea. And to me, he's a player that, because of his versatility, because he can play center, and because he's a positive impact when he's on the ice, I think he's a guy you're going to want to lock up. I mean, again, we're not looking for a crazy long term, but I would think you try and buy out some of those UFA years, have that certainty.
Doesn't 4 years, like to me,
4 years makes
to me
a
that's
lot of
why
sense
the Miles Wood contract makes so much sense, right? Like 4 years, $11 million or $11.5 million seems to just make a lot of sense, right?
I could see it being like a 4 year, $10 million contract.
Valid point coming in via Twitter where he says, please include, this is from Rob Hawley on Twitter, says, please include Seattle expansion draft, sort of that
thinking
into this contract because, you know, if Kopp is one of those guys guys you have to expose in the expansion draft, well, you're not thrilled about the possibility of losing him, but he's, you know, certainly a guy that, you know, you're not going to rip your hair out if you do end up having to lose a guy like him in the expansion draft. So getting him under contract for 4 years would probably, you would probably not protect him, I would imagine. I mean, this is going so far ahead. Who knows?
We haven't quite got to the point where we're doing our Seattle, who will the Jets protect?
But you definitely know that Kevin Cheveldayoff is factoring that into the, any of the contracts.
Whenever he's signing contracts this summer, he's definitely thinking about that. So to me, I agree with that. I think a 4 year, I mean, I'd put it in around the $10 million range, maybe a little bit higher, but that, you know, I mean, it gives Kopp a bump up, gives him a little bit more of that, you know, certainty knowing that he'll have a 4 year deal. And I think from the Jets' perspective, they have a center that they like, they have a winger that, you know, he can do that, but he's a smart player. He doesn't generally cost you very much when he's on the ice.
Center or wing going forward? If you're signing him to a 4 year deal, are you signing him, best laid plans, of course, but are you thinking that he's going to be a center, or are you thinking he's going to be a winger?
Well, the thing with Kopp is he's just as good on the wing as he is at center, right? And on a team like the Jets, though, it's a little bit trickier, right? Because you like to have Adam Lowry on his line, right? So they play together. I would probably say at this point in his career, wing, but he's played both at times almost every year, right? So I think he would probably prefer to play center, Dave, but on this team, he works so well playing with Adam Lowry, and, you know, it's not going to be Brandon Tanev possibly next year. It might be, we'll see, but I would probably say on this team at the NHL level, a wing. But again, I don't know if it matters as much as people think, right? Because those players that can play wing and center, I think, are really invaluable. You look at, you know, guys like Jamie Benn, and, you know, he can play a little bit of center if he needs to. But I just want to say this about Kopp. He's a very underrated player. And a lot of people say, well, you know, he's just a grinder, he's a glue guy. But this is a guy that can score, and he's got a lot of versatility. And if you don't think he's a big part of this Jets team, you haven't been watching this Jets team, and you haven't been talking to the coaching staff and the players. This is a guy they want to sign.
Every NHL team needs guys who can score between 10 and 15 goals a year.
Right.
I mean, you need a guy, you know, you got your superstars who are going to get you your 35s or your 40s in the Connors and the Lyonnais, but every team needs depth scoring of guys who can pump, you know, put in between 10 and 15. And Kopp did that last year. Dave, last word quickly.
I would just say that to me, Andrew Kopp would, you know, start as a winger when you're playing with Adam Lowry, just because they play so well together. And I think, as you said, I think earlier in this, one of the segments, you know, best laid plans. The reality is, we all know that you don't stay healthy for 100% of the season. So that at some point they would probably need to have that ability to throw him into center. So I think you play him on the wing, and then obviously when need be, put him at center.
He's one of the litany of names that Kevin Cheveldayoff has to sign, especially now as the NHL silly season with the final over. It's going to get much busier over the next weeks and months. When we come back, Scott Billick of NHL.com covers the Winnipeg Jets. He's going to join us next for more Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our question of the day, we want to hear from you on Twitter, is what do you think the Winnipeg Jets should re-sign Andrew Kopp for, years and dollar value? Send us your comments at Illegal Curve or via text message. Send your texts to 129090. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Remember that if you need your latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, it's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He covers the Winnipeg Jets for NHL.com. He's a good friend of ours. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Scott Billick. Scott, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Scotty, we miss you. We never see you anymore. You don't call, you don't write.
I don't blame you
right now. I mean, Jets have been out for 2 months now. I mean, we don't see each other anymore.
I know, but as he's a very social guy there, Scotty. You know,
yeah, like Scott, we can go to a movie. We can maybe go see a Fringe play this summer, you know.
Don't you have two kids now?
I have one on the way that I'm aware of.
I think this is on you. It's on me.
Yeah.
Thanks for prefacing Scott, that you're aware of.
Scotty, basically what you're saying is don't contact you until training camp starts.
And even That's then, right, probably yeah. not.
Yeah.
Scott,
I'm hibernating.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if you heard our question of the day, but I'll pose it to you. We were talking about Andrew Kopp. He's, of course, a restricted free agent, 2 years away from unrestricted free agency. What do you think Kevin Cheveldayoff is looking to get Andrew Kopp under contract for in terms of years and dollar value?
Yeah, I mean, I think a longer-term deal would be beneficial for the team and for Cheveldayoff. I think they view Andrew Kopp as a player that can play, that will grow into a bigger role. I mean, I think we kind of saw that this year, this past year. I think we've kind of seen it for a while now. But, with questions at second line center and people wanting to know if perhaps Andrew Kopp can fill that role, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see a 4-year deal at some point. Something like that, something along those lines, maybe in the, the $2.5 million range-ish. If you look at some of these different, the Evolving Wilds contract projections, they have him at a 2-year deal around the $2.2 million range. So, you're always going to pay more when there's a little bit more term there. It'd be interesting to see. I think he's probably worth more than $2.5 million at the end of that deal. But, I think if you can get him at it now based on his, his production and that sort of thing, it'd be one of those kind of steals of a deal that, this team has with a couple of guys, Mark Scheifele, stuff like that. So, it's better to do it now than to do it, let's say in a year or two when he's become a bigger part and is playing a bigger role in the team and is demanding more. So you'd like to get more now and for less and then go from there and see what happens. But, I think Andrew Kopp has a big presence on this team. I think he just, you talked about Paul Maurice, he talks about him glowingly, teammates too. And his play, his 5-on-5 play, all those types of things, they certainly back up, what we see. So I think the longer the better for Cheveldayoff. And, this summer's so finicky with, the Laine contract, probably has to drop first. And then you go from there. What is Kyle Connor making? It all kind of hinges on a couple of the big deals to see where everything kind of finally sorts out. Whether you guys can, they can keep Brandon Tanev. Where they, what are they going to do with Tyler Myers? What happens with Jacob Trouba at the draft? Which is probably the biggest thing. Are you signing him for a year as your own rental? Are you signing him long term? Which I don't think is likely anymore, or are you trading him at the draft and getting, whatever package you can get back for him at that point? And then, knowing that you have probably, $7 or $8 million that you would have put into him, now you got to figure out where you're going to put that. Then Tyler Myers comes into the whole deal. I mean, we thought last summer was a big deal summer for this team and the Blake Wheeler contract and all that kind of stuff. But, this summer is, it's such a massive summer for this team and what it'll look like, going forward for many years to come, that, you got to get it right. Otherwise, things can go wrong pretty quickly.
Well, Scotty, just expanding on what you just said, Chevy, we all know, has a lot on his docket this summer, right? You mentioned, the RFAs, the UFAs. Is Jacob Trouba going to be traded? Are they going to bring back Tyler Myers or Brandon Tanev or Ben Sherrod or, the RFAs, what are they going to get? And you mentioned Patrick Laine. And to me, Patrick Laine seems like that is going to be the hardest contract to get done. And I was going to ask you which contract you think is going to get done next. And you kind of hinted that you thought it might be Laine because obviously, everything is going to depend on what he gets. But aside from Lauren Brossoit and obviously, some Manitoba Moose players, none of these players have been signed yet. But wouldn't it make more sense that Kyle Connor gets done first? Because it seems like that's the contract to me that it seems like that contract is in a drawer, as Drew likes to say, somewhere. And, they're ready to sign Kyle Connor to a long-term deal.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think either one of them, could be that guy who kind of finally gets the ball rolling. I mean, depending what Connor is going to make. I mean, I've seen projections where he's making $8 million a year. That's that's a lot of money. And then you got to figure out, well, what is Lainey worth? Is he worth the same? Is he worth more? I mean, you have a guy that's probably, you know, the best pure goal scorer in the league aside from Alex Ovechkin. And you, maybe, you know, he had a down year last year, so maybe you bridge him. But, you know, the bridging of Patrick Lainey, it's one of those things where if you can get him on the cheap now, you know, maybe that's a better thing, because in 2 years, if he scored another 100 goals, that dollar price is just going up and up and up, right? So, maybe this is that blessing in disguise where they can sign Line A to a lower term just based on last year. But I don't even know if that's possible. I mean, you know, you look at the guy who scored 100 and some odd goals now in his time in the league, and, you know, he's not far off from guys who have, you know, the best goal scorers in the league during that time. You know, he's right up there with them. So, I mean, one down year, sure, but I mean, I still think he's worth just an incredible amount of money given his age and what he has accomplished so far as an NHL player. So, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, I kind of went on a tangent there, but, like, you know, I think, you know, Kyle Connor could be the easy one because they know what they want to do with him. And so, you know, that's the easy contract, and you probably already, they've already planned for how much, you know, these guys are going to make. But the Laine contract just kind of changes things. If you sign him long term, it's probably an extra, you know, $3 million on top of what he would make instead of if you bridged him, right? So I think they both are extremely important given where the Jets are with the cap space they have, and it's around $25 million right now. The last time I checked, I mean, a good chunk of that is going towards those two players, and then you got to figure out, you know, are you going to try and trade? Because, you know, I've looked at, you know, different writing from different people looking at, you know, and just my own research on it. And, you know, you can't sign all these players and be below the cap. So, you know, do you buy out Dmitry Kulikov? Do you trade Matthew Perreault or some, you know, figure or Nikolai Ehlers? I know that's been talked about too. And I just from my own perspective, I don't think that's the right trade to make. I don't think trading Ehlers is a good idea at all. But again, you know, you have to be cap compliant. You know, that's the reality of it. So, you know, there's certainly some roster surgery that has to be done here. And yeah, it's just, you know, it's overwhelming sometimes to even think about, what has to be done here to get, you know, your best players under contract and still have enough money left over to ice a team that's still a very competitive team. All the way through, you know, hopefully, you know, in the Jets case, you know, through into the, you know, these months, you know, the Mays and the Junes, right? So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting thing this summer. It's the most important summer that the Jets have had here. And, yeah, lots to come for sure.
You know, Scott, you touched on it a little bit. And, I mean, to me personally, I understand why teams would be calling about this player. But I don't, if I was the Jets, I probably wouldn't be answering those phone calls. But how much credence do you give to this idea of the Nick Ehlers being moved or just, I like I said, I understand why teams would call, yeah. But how much credence do you actually give to the idea that the Jets would actually entertain that thought?
Not much. I mean, Nick Ehlers for $6 million could turn out to be a steal. I mean, what is he signed through 2024, 2025?
That's right.
I think that, yeah. So, Nick Ehlers, you watch him play, you know, if you look at the stats, if you just want to look at the raw top line numbers, who's played the best with Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele, it's been Nikolai Ehlers. The numbers suggest that. And so, you know, you have a player that's making, you know, he's only 23, I think, is a 30 goal scorer in the NHL. And, you know, he just has a game breaking, type of style to his play, that speed, you know. We've all witnessed it. You know, you're kind of, you know, you watch him, you know, fly through the zone. He's good at zone entries. Like, there's just a lot of good things that Nikolai Ehlers does. And I don't know why you would get rid of him to be cap compliant. I mean, there's other avenues that you can go. There are a couple of bad deals on this team. I think that Brian Little contract, especially, is going to come back to kind of haunt this team. I mean, you don't want to be paying $5.2 million for what essentially might be a fourth line center on this team. I mean, there's some other, you know, things, some other avenues I think you go down before you ever even try to trade Nick Ehlers. I think he's just such a part of this team going forward, the youth, that's only going to get better. And I think he's on a pretty good contract, especially later on, you know, in 2 years from now when, you know, the cap's going up again and blah, 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 blah. You know, like, you know, it's going to look like a good deal, just like Mark Scheifele's deal looks like a good deal. So I don't think he's the contract that you get rid of. I think you try and chop Perreault. I think you, you know, you attempt to buy out or you buy out Dmitry Kulikov. I just, the credence that I give to it, I think is low. I don't think, you know, the Jets are very, Shevel Dayoff is very, you know, especially with guys he's drafted. I mean, you know, he believes in those guys. I don't think that, you know, if, especially if they're going to lose Jacob Trouba, but you don't want to lose another, you know, a big piece of the pie as well. I mean, you're just starting to take steps backwards. And, you know, for a team that's a, you know, quote-unquote Stanley Cup contender, or at least, you know, a playoff contender, I mean, you don't want to jeopardize that. So, yeah, but credence for me, I wouldn't give it much.
Last question for you, Scott. Scott Bilk of NHL.com is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. First round of the NHL draft is, you know, 6 days from today. It's, of course, next Friday, starts at 7 o'clock Central Time. Coverage you can hear on TSN 1290. Jacob Trouba, when the draft starts, is he a member of the Winnipeg Jets?
I think there's no. You know, if you're forcing me to choose,
I'm forcing you. No offense, sitting here.
I mean, I think, you know, if Kevin Sheveldayoff wants into the first round this year, that's his ticket, right? I don't know who it goes to. I mean, I know, you know, people talked about him going to Detroit, blah blah blah. I don't know if Detroit wants to give up their high pick this year. But I mean, that is the cost of getting a guy who's, you know, a top four centerman with a 4 defenseman, top 2 defenseman, really, right? You know, this is a top pairing defenseman, 50 point guy now. I don't see how, you know, you're getting, you have to get back, you know, a high, you know, first round pick you're hoping, right? So, you know, I think if it goes into the draft, I mean, then it, you know, it comes, you know, there's just a whole different thing. I think the biggest thing is, you know, if you trade him at the draft, you know, you have to make sure there's a deal in place. I think that's the biggest thing, because, you know, no team's trading the first round pick away, whatever package that they have, you know, unless there's a deal in place to sign Trouba long term. So, but yeah, I think it's got to happen, you know, before next Friday, before, you know, the draft happens. Just otherwise, you know, then you're starting to look at, you know, what you can get for him after that. You know, some people suggest during the summer that you can get, you know, even better for him. I still think it's risky, but I mean, if you're putting me on the spot, I think he's traded before next.
So, Scott, if Trouba is not traded by next Friday, then we're going to call you out next Saturday, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, go for it. Whatever. I won't listen.
Scott Billick of NHL.com covers the Winnipeg Jets. Scotty, appreciate it, buddy. Have a great rest of the weekend.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much, Scott. When we come back, we'll discuss those Nikolaj Ehlers trade rumors. Do they make sense to the other fine gentlemen in this room? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I don't think anyone puts more pressure on himself than I do. You know, I'm not happy with my season. Obviously, the injuries and stuff like that, but that's not an excuse for me. But now I got a lot of time to get better, and that's something I need to take seriously.
Winnipeg Jets forward Nikolaj Ehlers, that was at a season-ending interview, talking about the season that he had.
I thought we were going to stop playing the season-ending interviews, like after we played Trouba's exit interview like 5 times.
Yeah, but we haven't played Ehlers yet. This is the first time we had to play Ehlers one.
That is true.
So then, you know, it was relevant. Content gold right there is what that is.
I can't believe we 2 months ago, we had an entire segment on the exit interviews, and we're talking about Mark Scheifele's body language and all that. I mean, leave these guys alone. They got knocked out in the first round. They don't want to talk to us.
Coming up next on the show, Mark Scheifele's body language discussion. Has it changed in the last couple months?
Ezzy, you're not supposed to tell the listeners what our next segment is going to be about.
You're getting ahead of yourself. We're talking about Nikolaj Ehlers right now.
I wish I was having an exit interview right now. So
we can make that happen.
That can be arranged. Anyways, we're talking about Nikolaj Ehlers. Ehlers and the trade chatter that surrounds him here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The Jets are not trading Ehlers.
This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So in the show plan that I distributed to you fine gentlemen, I had three different links to articles, one by Pierre LeBrun, one by Craig Custance, and one by Ken Wiebe, all alluding to the possibility of Nikolaj Ehlers either being traded or potentially available on the trade block. To me, this is one of the more inexplicable, you know, talking points of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
A guy who's 23 years old, a guy who
great contract.
He's got cost certainty, which was something the Jets, given their situation, certainly need. To me, this was one that I just don't understand. I think it's people filling, having to fill, ink space for without having anything else to say.
Right. And I feel like it's just because Ehlers had a down year. And, you know, we should mention he did miss games.
He was injured.
So, I mean, that factors into it. And he didn't have any points in the St. Louis series. So that's why I think this nobody's going to suggest the Jets are going to trade Kyle Connor or Patrick Laine or Blake Wheeler. So Nikolaj Ehlers to me is like the best Jets player that you could kind of speculate that the Jets might trade. But
actually, crazy people are speculating that the Jets might trade Patrick Laine.
Well, if you're speculating that the Jets are going to trade Laine, then you're an idiot.
Whoa.
Well, you are. I mean, are you kidding me? The second overall pick in the 2016 draft, a guy that's going to have 50 goals probably for the next 10 years. I mean, or at the very least, 40 goals.
He's a prolific goal scorer in the NHL.
The Jets are,
it's not worth spending any airtime on the idea.
Yeah, and the Jets are going to trade Hellebuck and Bufflin, and they're going to trade Wheeler.
Hey, be careful. We live in a crazy media world. They're just going to clip you saying that.
No, but, I mean,
Ezra Ginsburg on Illegal Curve said.
I mean, Patrick Laine is a generational player. I mean, let's not kid ourselves here.
He's got improvements to make in his game, obviously.
And we've been probably more critical of Laine than the other shows on this station, right? And that's no offense to anybody else, but I mean, Laine was not good this year, guys. I mean, he had a good month of November, but I mean, he had a down year. But mm-hmm. let's stick to Ehlers here.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets are so strong on that left side with Kyle Connor and Nikolaj Ehlers. I just don't see them wanting to trade from a position of strength to address a position of weakness. I mean, we know what the possible position of weakness could be if they don't get a right shot defenseman back for Jacob Trouba, right? So, I mean, the left side is obviously weaker now that you have Trouba and Myers there, because you still kind of have them penciled in for now. They're still members of the Jets until July 1.
Sure.
But there's a chance that they don't have Myers and Trouba, and you go into next season, we've talked about it, with Sammy Niku and Tucker Poolman as your second and third pairing. But the
point...
It just
doesn't make sense.
Well, no. For me, you're only trading Nikolaj Ehlers if he's part of a bigger trade, or, as it's mentioned by Craig Custance, if it's plan B or plan C. But I really don't think Chevy has any interest in trading Nikolaj Ehlers. Teams calling about Nikolaj Ehlers is a different thing than Chevy trying to trade Nikolaj Ehlers.
Exactly.
It's very different. You can call and you can ask about Patrick Laine. You can call and you can ask about Mikael Burton. You can ask about Eric Comrie. Yeah. I mean, you can ask about 30 different players. So I really do think that this is something that isn't going to happen. And what I was going to say is, even though Ehlers is coming off of a down year, this is a guy that I absolutely think can probably score 40 goals and 80 points in the NHL. I mean, you forget this guy's 23 years old.
If he had been healthy for the entirety of the season, he probably gets close to 30 again.
Mm-hmm.
He probably gets what he had last year, and maybe he doesn't get the same number of assists, but he had 37 points in 62 games. And sure, you don't like that he went scoreless in the playoffs and he hasn't scored and he hasn't had a goal in 21 playoff games. You don't like that. But I think it's way too soon to be throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you both. I think the fact that I think this is simply just conversation in the summer. It's speculation. I suspect what it is other teams
planting.
Trying to churn. Yeah, I think, I mean, look, we have to be realistic. Where do these things come from? A GM makes a comment to, a GM outside of the market, let's say an Edmonton type GM.
Yeah, is performing malfeasance against the Jets.
So, he creates a little buzz. He gets some people talking, and then, maybe
plant the seed.
And to me, it's just, again, it's just a function of gamesmanship. I mean, we see it all the time you saw with Kelly McCrimmon was here the entire time Ottawa was here. The Ottawa Brain Trust last year with the Mark Stone, Kelly McCrimmon was around Winnipeg pretty much the whole time. And these guys are all around. So there's always these little games that are being played. So to me, you know, you've got a guy who's going to be most likely a consistent 30-goal scorer for the remainder of this contract. And, he's a possession, monster really for this team. So to me, why would you even think about trading Nikolaj Ehlers? What? Because the reality is he hasn't had a phenomenal playoffs. Fine. But, neither did most of your team this year. And so to me, it's a function of, like Drew just said, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. This is a guy that you can really rely upon in the years to come.
And Craig Custance mentioned in his article last week that the likelihood of Ehlers being traded is low, whereas the likelihood of Trouba being traded is high. So even Craig Custance, who included this in his article, mentions that,
you come out with an article, top 20, trade bait players.
Right.
But
right.
You need to fill 20.
Exactly.
And so numbers 15 through 20, the possibility of them being traded is likely as remote as can be.
Again, perfect example, and we talked about this during the first round of the playoffs. Vladimir Tarasenko was a guy that when the Blues were struggling, they were talking about the Blues possibly trading Tarasenko, and look how that turned out. Now he's enjoying the Stanley Cup with his new baby boy.
There you have it. When we come back, John Mattis is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. Talk to him about everything that's going to come up in the NHL. It's going to be a very busy week and month in the NHL. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter and reach us in studio at Illegal Curve. You can also send us your comments via text message. Send your texts to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. On our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program John Mattis. John is a national hockey writer for thescore.com, good friend of the program. John, good morning and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Are you basking in the glory of the Toronto Raptors title or what?
Absolutely.
Well, John, we want to know if you like chips with a dip. That's what we want to know.
Wasn't that the weirdest
interview?
It was also just the fact that he had like a post, title scrum and like came up like he had won the title himself was a little odd and a little, I feel like, ego-based. He just walks up like he, just hit the game-winning shot or something. It was really odd, whole situation.
Did you see his watch?
No, I did not.
It's on. You can check it out on Deadspin. It's the creepiest thing in the world.
Wasn't there a we, though? Didn't he talk about we when he was talking about winning the title? I was like, really?
He's a little delusional, I'm going to say. Hey, might have some delusions of grandeur there. We're talking, of course, about Drake, Drizzy. That's how I like to refer to him, of course. John, obviously, we brought you on not to talk about rap, but to talk about the hockey world. St. Louis Blues win Lord Stanley's Cup on Wednesday night. They win in 7 games over the Boston Bruins. Looking back now that the season is concluded, now that it's a little bit in the rearview mirror, how would you evaluate sort of the NHL season as a whole? Would you say that this was a quality year? Was this a year that was sort of a dog's breakfast? That's my perspective personally. I mean, how would you think back at the entire year? How would you evaluate it?
I think the word that comes to mind right away is unpredictable. If you circle back, if you try to go back in your mind to, season predictions or just where you had teams pegged coming into the season. St. Louis was certainly, in the top 10, I would say, of teams. But, Winnipeg, where you guys are from, Nashville, Tampa Bay, Boston makes it to the final, so they're a bit of an exception. But there were some heavy hitters that did not make big noise in the playoffs. And that sort of dampened things, I would say, from a national perspective. It made it more interesting, maybe, on one level, where there's a lot of underdogs making it to the second round, third round. But it was a little unpredictable, and this whole officiating thing that just took over the playoffs was obviously a black mark on the season. Like, there's no way around it. You never want the referees to be a huge part of the discussion. You want them to blend in and, make the right calls. And obviously there's a big situation that the NHL needs to handle, and they are handling it through the GM meetings next week and then the Board of Governors, and they're going to come up with some sort of solution. But the fact that it was a talking point is not good during the highest profile time of the year, which is the playoffs. Unpredictable. Game sevens galore in the playoffs, upsets. The fact that Tampa, I think we're kind of forgetting, Tampa Bay was this historically good regular season team, and they got you know, they got turned on their head by a Columbus team that went for it at the deadline. So, you know, layers and layers of unpredictability from this season. And it's always hard to compare, you know, past seasons to the current season because of the recency bias that you have, or just, you know, it depends what kind of person you are or where you're from. But I thought this season was fun. I thought there were a lot of good storylines. And ultimately, two teams that ended up in the Cup final were pretty good teams. It's not like they were Cinderella teams. And obviously, St. Louis being a story in and of itself with Jordan Binnington and the January 3rd storyline where they're last place and then they win the Cup, and a lot of perseverance within that roster. So overall, I give it a solid B-plus of a season.
Yeah, and John, just sticking with the Stanley Cup final, I agree with you. I mean, at the end of the day, it was still a 7-game series, and I think that also it had a lot to do with the amount of days between games and the amount of time that Boston had off between the Eastern Conference final and the Stanley Cup final. But when you think about it, Boston was up 2-1 in the series, and then you had St. Louis up 3-2 in the series, and then it ultimately obviously went to 7 games. But when you think about it, these were two evenly matched teams, and to me, St. Louis is an unbelievable story, and now you have 2 years in a row where you have first-time Stanley Cup winners.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's definitely good for the league, especially when you factor in, you know, the Carolina Hurricanes, finally relevant again. It's been a decade since they made the playoffs. Their whole storm surge was in a, you know, story in and of itself. And the fact that they made some noise in the playoffs is very good for the league. Is it good for their short-term ratings on TV? Absolutely not. As we saw with the Cup final, not having a Canadian team in there, not having a team that has a ton of superstars. I guess you could argue Boston has its star power, but still, like, you know, there's no McDavid or Crosby or Ovechkin that you want to tune in for. And it all sort of gets wrapped up in and then there's a bow on it with the St. Louis team, because there is no superstar on that team. I mean, Vladimir Tarasenko, he's too hot and cold to be a superstar. Ryan O'Reilly is too plain and good at the little things to be a superstar. They just have a lot of very good players. And together, I don't even think when you look at their roster on paper, even after what they've all accomplished, over this year, I still don't look at it and go, that is a great team. I look at it and go, that's a very good team that executed at the right time of the year. So, yeah, it's the Cup final itself, as you mentioned, did totally drag on. And I think they lost some people because of these breaks in between games were, you know, 2 days instead of one, and they're going up against the NBA final where, you know, let's face it, Canada's a huge part of the hockey community, and everyone was focusing on the Raptors, and these two teams, whether it was St. Louis or Boston, didn't really elicit strong feelings. As Boston, they just keep winning. It doesn't matter what sport they win. And then St. Louis, let's face it, kind of a nondescript market. It's not a, I'm not, you know, insulting them or anything, but it's just, there's not a lot of kind of, pizzazz there. Like Vegas last year, it's like, oh, Las Vegas, people can connect to the city because they've been there, or they, you know, what an incredible story as a, you know, first-year team. But with St. Louis, despite all the storylines, it was just the market and the franchise. It's just never really elicited strong feelings. So, you know, when it was all said and done, good series, you know, good playoffs, but was missing a little bit of that, you know, it factor.
John, I know it's kind of a moot point now, and you don't want to take anything away from Ryan O'Reilly because he was fantastic and he had 23 points in 26 games, but do you think that Conn Smythe should have gone to a goaltender? Because you look at the way Jordan Binnington played in Game 7 and specifically Game 5, I would argue that the Blues stole Game 5. Do you think maybe Binnington should have got more consideration for the Conn Smythe? And as I mentioned, at this point, it doesn't really matter and you don't want to diminish what O'Reilly did.
Yeah, hey, it's fine to talk about it and everything. Yeah, it's definitely, I personally think that Ryan O'Reilly deserved it more than Jordan Binnington, just because I think everyone got caught up in the Binnington story that dated all the way back to January. I think in the playoffs, he was good. He stole a game or two, but he had a couple of off nights. And I don't know if Ryan O'Reilly had many off nights the entire season. He was one guy that was steady in the regular season when the team was terrible, and then he was part of that great run. And then you go and look at what the Conn Smythe is kind of encompassing, and it's just the playoffs. And he, time after time, whether it was, you know, after a loss, he's the one who scores the game-winning goal the next game, or just getting them going offensively overall, mixed in with shutting other teams' top lines down. I just thought, you know, the fact that he ends up with 23 points, I believe he was tied for the playoff scoring you kind of wrap that up with what he brings to the table, and I think it was more impressive than what Binnington did, even though, you know, the story there of him being a fourth stringer and ending up as a Stanley Cup champion is incredible. I just think when you narrow it down to the postseason, forget about kind of the personal journeys, I think that the body of work for Ryan O'Reilly was more impressive.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is John Mattis. John is the national hockey writer for thescore.com.
So, John, I heard this quote the other day. He's going to earn a big pay raise this summer, and we're looking forward to paying him. Now, generally, you're not expecting to hear a general manager of a hockey team say that, but that's what Doug Armstrong said about Jordan Binnington. You know, and as you just mentioned previously, this is a guy who was fourth on the depth chart for the Blues. He had signed prior to this, he had signed one-year contracts for the last 3 years. So what do you think, looking forward, do you think that the Blues are going to make a long-term commitment to this player, or do you think that they'd be wise to maybe to hedge it a little bit and go a little bit short-term, considering that he is still kind of an unknown, and, you know, he's going to be a lot more known now after this season?
I would say that it would be pretty safe to go long-term with him, just because it's not like he played 10 games this year. I think he ended up playing around 40 or 50. Like, that's mm-hmm. a large body of work. And you expect throughout this process where he comes in January and ends up, basically playing almost every game through June. Like, that's a lot of work within that period, high stakes. Like, I think that they have seen what Jordan Binnington can do. It's not a mirage, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And you just, in that market, especially when Jake Allen's been, an issue for a number of years, and they've had their goaltending troubles in general for a while here, I think you need to just lock this guy up. I know that goaltending can be kind of difficult to get a handle on, and, you know, a groin injury, in October of next year could sort of derail his status as a number one goalie, just because goalies, you know, once one injury hits, it kind of goes downhill. Like, there's always a risk factor, but I think given what's happened, and, you know, he's not going to be like, you know, $10 million or anything. I think that you lock him up now and you bet on this guy who clearly has ice in his veins, clearly has the skill level to shut out, you know, the best in the world. So you take what you saw and you evaluate it and you present him with a long-term deal, and maybe he takes a bit of a discount just because finally a team is offering him, you know, what he believes he deserves, and maybe you get him at, you know, $4 million over, I don't know, 6-7 years or something, and it ends up, you know, looking pretty good, or maybe $5 million, you know, to sweeten the pot, and it's not so bad on your cap situation, because you don't want him to have another excellent season after, you know, bridge him or something for 1 or 2 years, and then you're looking at a really big payday like what Sergei Bobrovsky is going to get on the open market. You don't want to tie your hands like that, where you end up overpaying for him just because you couldn't swallow the pill in terms of length of contract.
John Mattis is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. John is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. John, what storyline are you paying the closest attention to now that the season is over and we're into the silly season of transaction time?
That's a good question, because I don't really know the answer. There's just so many, because you look at the unrestricted free agent class, it's pretty impressive. I know it's been diluted a little bit. At one point there was Drew Doughty and some other big names in there that have signed up with their current teams. But Erik Karlsson hasn't made a decision. He's been with San Jose all year, and he could have signed with them, and he's, you know, apparently still in talks with them, and that could easily just, you know, be released to the world as a fact that he signed, you know, any day now. But him alone and his current situation with his health, and, you know, the guy's not exactly young now. He's I think he's 29. He's going to want a 7-year deal with another team, 8 years with San Jose. If you're a team, you still have to consider that this guy has gone through a lot over the last 2 years, and, you know, it's going to look really good whatever deal he signs for the next year or two, but you got to consider that the injuries that he's sustained are kind of severe, and you got to really weigh that in. You know, are we going to like this deal 3 years from now, or is he going to kind of fall off a cliff? And I wouldn't bet against Erik Karlsson, but you still need to really consider that. So Erik Karlsson, you know, in a bubble, fantastic storyline. And then you go down the list with, you know, Joe Pavelski still hasn't signed in San Jose. So again, another UFA to keep your eyes on. And then there's, you know, Sergei Bobrovsky, Artemi Panarin, Matt Duchene, all those guys that ended the year with Columbus. with Duchesne being the one that may resign in Columbus, but again, you know, he may end up in Nashville or somewhere like that. And then, you know, the plot thickens when you get closer to the restricted free agent list, and Marner, Point, Rantanen, Tkachuk, and I think that the whole offer sheet thing might occur. We don't know, but I'm more interested to see, you know, what type of trickle effect this will all have. Like, who's going to be the first to sign with their current team, and how is everyone going to slot in after that player? Let's say it's Kyle Connor who signs first, or Patrick Laine. How fast are these other deals going to get done, and where is everyone going to end up by the time it's October and everyone's ready to play again? Because really, that's what we're waiting for, right? Is the first domino to fall. And then all these RFAs, this incredible class, will sort of start slotting in. And sure, there might be an offer sheet, and there might not. But one thing that I know for certain is that we're going to have some clarity on how much these guys are getting paid in October, and you know, what the length of their contracts will be. Because I think Auston Matthews threw a bit of a wrench in things when he signed for 5 years at 11.6. Because you just assume that these guys are going to sign for 8 years. But hey, you know, maybe you go shorter. And you get a bigger payout, and you bet on yourself, and then you get a second contract when you're, I don't know, you know, 27 or 28. That's another 8 years, and you sort of cash out again. It's sort of doubling up if you have so much faith in yourself and your ability to rise to the occasion. So the UFAs, RFAs, there's a couple buyout candidates too. It's going to be crazy.
John, last question for you here, and you mentioned some of the big name UFAs: Artemi Panarin, Matt Duchesne, Erik Karlsson, Sergei Bobrovsky. Jake Gardner is a guy that we're going to talk about later in the show. Obviously, you're in Toronto, and there's always a chance that Gardner comes back in Toronto, but they're probably going to have to get rid of some contracts. Nikita Zaitsev and Patrick Marleau are the names that we're hearing that might be traded by the Leafs. But when you're talking about Gardner, is he a guy that maybe should be talked about a little bit more? Because it seems to me that there are a lot of teams out there that would love to have Gardner in their top four. You hear Vancouver, you hear Chicago. So is that a guy that's really going to intrigue you as far as seeing where he's going to ultimately end up?
Yeah, with defensemen, I mean, he's right up there. I think he's probably worthy of 6.57 over a long-term deal. Seems like a lot. Maybe if you just focus on what he's done in the playoffs and the blunders and all that sort of like cloud that hangs over him. When you take that all away, and those are small sample sizes. It's just one game here, one game there, where the microscope's on them and things don't work out well. When you think of the full body of work, you know, his underlying numbers, his skating ability is top-notch. You know, he has played in a top four role for a number of years here, has looked pretty good. The fact of the matter is that the Toronto Maple Leafs don't have room for him at this current point. If they get rid of Nikita Zaitsev and they get rid of Patrick Marleau, all of a sudden not only do they have a hole on their defense, but they can actually pay Jake Gardner close to what he would get paid as a UFA. And mind you, you know, Gardner's still going to have to take some sort of discount, but the discount will be minimal compared to what it would be if the Leafs went to him right now and said, can you please sign here for $4 million? I think he'd probably laugh in their face and say, I'm out of here. But yeah, I think any team that's getting Jake Gardner, whether he goes UFA or stays with the Leafs, is getting a guy who's kind of, I don't know if underrated is the right word, but misunderstood. And, you know, it's just, it's high-risk plays that he makes, like an Erik Karlsson that we talked about earlier, that blow up sometimes. But the rest of his game, he can play, you know, 20 to 23 minutes a night. He can, he can run a power play, usually the second unit. And he can just, he shifts the ice the other way. When he's on the ice, the play is in the other end. And that is a huge net positive. It doesn't matter if he has a couple blunders a year. I think Jake Gardner is a guy that you would want on your hockey team and in your top four if you're winning a Stanley Cup. So I think he'll get paid a lot if he chooses to, and if he wants to stay local, he's still going to get a very good contract, but it'll be a bit of a discount.
John Mattis is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. John, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, nice catching up, guys. Have a good one.
Likewise, John. We'll do it again real soon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, the latest news regarding Jacob Trouba and some potential destinations if the Jets elect to trade him. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Do the Toronto Maple Leafs want a
25, 26-year-old right shot defenseman that's both good offensively and defensively, big and strong and fast and skilled and all top-pairing defensemen. And would they trade Nazem Kadri for that if they were getting it long-term? I think in a heartbeat.
That was TSN's Bob McKenzie appearing on our sister station, TSN 1050 in Toronto, talking about the possibility of Jacob Trouba being traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs. You've heard the talk that in exchange for Nazem Kadri of all the destinations.
Well, I really hope it's not a one-for-one trade.
I don't think that would be one-for-one.
Because that
one.
Would be
one-sided.
A very bad trade for the Jets.
That would be a great trade
for the Leafs.
With all due respect to Bob McKenzie. I'm not suggesting that a trade like that couldn't happen. You know the chances of Jacob Trouba signing a long-term contract in Toronto are?
Zero. About the same amount that they would be here in Winnipeg at this point.
No, I actually disagree. I think if he's going to sign a long-term contract anywhere in Canada, it's going to be with Winnipeg. I just don't think that he's being traded, it's not to a
Can you imagine Trouba, Dave, in that market?
No.
You know what? Jacob Trouba can handle himself. I actually think, you know, when you're in the room with him, he's good with the media. He can be... You know, he always betrays
the same sort of conversation style and personality.
Yeah, he really doesn't change.
Very even keel.
Yeah, he's not a guy who gets overly excited. You know, he gives you an answer. He's concise. But, you know, again, I don't know that he would love being in the Toronto media market. But the reality is Jacob Trouba, if he's going anywhere and signing a long-term deal, will not be in a Canadian market aside from Winnipeg.
Yes, exactly right. With all the rumored destinations, Toronto being one of those rumored destinations seems like the least plausible in my mind. Craig Custance published an article in TheAthletic.com sort of updating. He talked to Jacob Trouba in Michigan. They're both Michigan guys, Custance living in Detroit and Trouba obviously being from that area. And he talked to Kevin Cheveldayoff, and here's the quote from Kevin Cheveldayoff, quote, "We're having conversations with teams about the potential of trading him. It's like everything at this point in time. There are many, many conversations on the go from 31 different teams. There's a lot of nuances that come in and out of every conversation that you have, not just necessarily about Jacob Trouba, but your hockey team."
Is Kevin Cheveldayoff's favorite word conversation?
Probably, but I mean, at least he comes out and says that, you know, they are having conversations. Normally he says we're having conversations about everybody at all times.
Yeah, no.
And, I mean, there's a little more substance there than I think in some of the other, as you say, Dave Chevy speak.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree, Drew. I think like the fact that he acknowledges it is something, but, you know.
I think it's huge because I think we all knew that Kevin Cheveldayoff is talking to other teams about Jacob Trouba, or we thought that in the future he's going to start talking to other teams, right? So I think it is pretty big, right?
This week, I think.
I think the issue here is, and I don't know if you want to get into all these teams that he mentions.
There's five teams that Craig Custance mentions in the article.
Right, and, you know, Trouba's fiance going to medical school in Florida, like, I mean, how much reaching are we going to do here? I mean, Trouba...
I think that's a big reason why I think Florida... I think one of the two Florida teams... would be if I had to lay odds, if I had to place money on one of the two teams to get Jacob Trouba, I would think it's going to be one of the two Florida teams that are the front runners in my books.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
Based on his fiance going to medical school?
I think based on family factors, wouldn't that be a big reason?
I think a team will trade for Trouba if they want him, regardless of his fiance being in medical school.
Well, I don't think that necessarily the reason that she's in medical school.
What Craig Custance mentions. Well,
he's connecting dots.
Well, Craig is a great journalist, but
he's connecting dots.
Drew.
I've always thought that the Florida Panthers make a lot of sense for Jacob Trouba.
I think there's 10 teams that make a lot of sense for Trouba.
Well, I don't think that the Detroit Red Wings, for instance, are trading significant assets right now to get Jacob Trouba.
I didn't say Detroit.
But Detroit and Toronto have been talked about. Detroit being, of
Detroit's
course,
in the middle of a rebuild.
Right.
Trouba getting a long-term deal, and it could happen. Who knows, guys? But I agree with you. There are other teams that I think would be higher on my list than Detroit. But I'm just saying, I mean, first of all, who doesn't want to go to Florida? Yes, we know the state tax, all that, but we're talking Florida here. Who doesn't want to go play for, the Tampa Bay Lightning, 128-point team. No, I don't want to play for them. I mean, that's all I'm saying. You don't think Jake Gardner wants to go to Tampa Bay? You don't think Artemi Panarin or Eric Carlson wants to? That's all I'm saying.
No, fair enough.
And I'm not criticizing you. I'm just saying, like, I saw, and good for her, obviously. You know, I'm not picking on Trouba's fiance that she's going to medical school. I'm just saying, is that really going to be the reason why the Jets trade Trouba to Tampa Bay and the reason why Tampa Bay trades for him? I just, It might
The reason might be because he's a hell of a hockey player. Well,
that's what I'm saying. I mean, maybe that'll factor in a little bit. It's like, it's convenient for Trouba. It would be convenient for his fiance because that's where she's going to school. But I don't necessarily know that that means that Tampa Bay's the front runner.
Well, if you're Trouba and you're Kurt Overhart, his agent, and you're talking about, you know, where do you want to spend the next, you know, 7 or 8 years of your career, I think the Florida Panthers are, or the Tampa Bay Lightning, a Florida-based team, given all of his connections there, make a lot of sense to me. It make more sense to me than the talk about the Philadelphia Flyers or the talk about some of the other teams in the Eastern Conference.
And it could be a team that we haven't talked about. I mean, oftentimes, guys, we talk about these trades and it ends up being to a team that we haven't talked about. And it's possible that he goes to Florida, but you hear that the Panthers are really after Artemi Panarin and or Sergei Bobrovsky. Is there enough money to get all of these guys?
Well, time will tell. Dave, quickly on the last word here.
You know, the only thing I would say is the fact that Kevin Cheveldayoff said something simply could be, again, GMs, we're always talking about their machinations and what they're trying to do and how they're trying to create a little bit of a conversation in this, you know, ironically enough, using that word. But it simply could be gamesmanship by Kevin Cheveldayoff. Let's get more people talking about the Winnipeg Jets and Jacob Trouba. Maybe he's only got 5 teams that are interested. Maybe he wants 15, 20 teams. You know what I mean? So sure. It simply could be the fact, I mean, because the fact, it's very out of character for Kevin Cheveldayoff to be that direct. Mm-hmm. So to me, maybe that speaks more to something he's trying to achieve, which is to drive the price up for Jacob Trouba than it is right now.
Well, we'll see. I mean, 6 days from now, of course, the NHL draft, and that's all the sort of the time period where everyone's expecting a Trouba trade to go down if it's going to occur. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins. They were going to trade Phil Kessel. Now they're not going to trade Phil Kessel. We talked to Matt Wenzel of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette about everything going on in Pittsburgh. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.